días. Me llamo Cristina Diana Rivera Silva de Ramírez. Soy la hija de Dolores Silva y la nieta de Socorro Cárdenas. Vivo en Stanton, pero soy de Los Ángeles. Mi mamá es mexicana y mi papá es puertorriqueño. Y en el mundo latino es una mezcla extraña, mexicano y puertorriqueño. Todas mis familias son católicas y viven en Los Ángeles, pero no todos, porque mis hijos están aquí con mí y también mi mamá. Ahorita, algunas de quienes están aquí piensan que estoy en la iglesia equivocado. ¿Cuándo hablas en inglés? So, some of you may have been checking your program and saying, am I in the right church? Is there an English-Spanish service? Is there a service in Spanish at 10 and then one in English at 11? And you might have been feeling a little bit uncomfortable in your stomach. Like, you know, you kind of get that pit in your stomach sometimes when you're not quite sure if you're in the right place or doing the right thing or having kind of a conversation that feels a little bit tense, right? And that's okay. Because today we're going to talk about that uncomfortable feeling that we get. Folks who may not have felt uncomfortable might have been people who understand Spanish. And some of our POCUs are used to being uncomfortable. It's part of our experience in the world. It's part of our experience sometimes at church. There's a lot of times where we're just used to being uncomfortable. Because this world in the United States currently is not exactly built for us. So today's sermon probably will speak more to folks who aren't used to being uncomfortable, and therefore my POC siblings, this sermon, you know, is kind of for you but not about you. So I just want to name that. You religious professionals of color go an entire year with serving in congregations, and sometimes there's a lot of discomfort. Some of you all have heard about a lot of you religious professionals of color who are having a lot of difficulty in their service in our congregations. And one of the ways that we try and give comfort to each other is that finding our way home, which is an annual gathering of UU religious professionals of color. It happens in lots of different places. This year it'll be we don't know where it is this year yet. But it gives us a moment to come together and to be able to put down what we are faced with in our everyday lives and just be with each other. So one of the things that I like to remind folks of is, you know, when you have that uncomfortable feeling, remember that that's something that's going to go away, right? The minute you identify that you're being discomforted, your brain actually flips over and allows you to get away from the fight or flight idea and really get into what is it that was making me uncomfortable. You're not tensed up and you don't have that. And that's why it's really important when we do racial justice work that there's areas for caucusing. It's not segregation. It's a time for people to just be able to set down that discomfort and really get in and be able to do the work together. So as we go through our time together today, if you feel that discomfort, just recognize it, right? And just say, oh yeah, that's the thing that she was talking about. So the sermon title is Calling In, Called Out, and Showing Up. During the 1960s civil rights movement, we had a lot of calling out. We had calling out of injustice around voting. We had calling out of injustice around segregation. We had calling out of injustice around a lot of laws that really were on the books, ready to help keep up our systems of oppression, right? And we knew that we needed to say, this is not right, right? We needed to be able to say, these things are not right. They do not hold us to our ideals of liberation. They do not hold us to ideals of self-love. They do not hold us to ideals of community care. And so we were calling out those injustices. And it was really, really important to be able to say, no, this is not right. We demand that you change it. But then we realized, as time went on, that those laws were really only worth the paper they were written on because they were upheld and enforced by people. And people who don't have mutual liberation at heart, it doesn't really matter what those laws said, because how they were being practiced, how they were showing up in our communities, didn't really change, right? And so we have examples of being called out and being called in. We call in now in Unitarian Universalism, we hear that phrase, being called in, because we know that in community, when we call into each other and we say, yes, we know this isn't right, but we're calling you in to do that work together, that is the change that we're going to need to see in order for us all to be able to get free. It's not just enough to point out the things that are wrong. It has to be done in community so that we are coming together and working on those things. Because that mutual liberation, if I'm looking at you and you're looking at me and we are mutually invested in both of us being free, that we now know is what is going to change. Super important to change laws. Marriage equality, can I get an amen? Thank you. Yes, super important to change the laws. We get that. We are not saying that that isn't really, really important. We're just saying that the enforcement of those laws are done by people, right? An institution. The people that we call in to do this work together is what's going to make the difference. So at GA, General Assembly 2016, our youth, holy cow, they called us in, right? Our youth at General Assembly, they do not hold back, right? They just say, people, What are you doing? What are you up to? Because we see a lot of congregations with Black Lives Matter signs outside, and that's all they're doing. And that is not enough. Those kids, by the hundreds, got up and called in every Unitarian Universalist out there and said, we want to know by next year what you all are doing besides putting a banner on your building about making Black Lives Matter a reality. That's the kind of call in that we're talking about. It can still be vibrant. It can still be alive. It can still kick us in our pants, right? Sometimes we need that. But it cares about us. We know that those youth care about us. They're our youth. We see them at church every day, every Sunday, hopefully, if they can get up in time. But we see them, we know them, we've loved them, we've grown up with them, we've seen them grow up with us. And we know that that call in is a call in to our values as Unitarian Universalists and to living those values. So calling in the era of Black Lives Matter looks a little bit different than it did maybe in the 1960s when we were calling out. Calling in during the era of Black Lives Matter looks like really looking at what anti-blackness looks like, what misogyny looks like, what homophobia looks like. And it calls us in to have some really difficult conversations and for us to engage even when we're scared, right? Calls us to engage even when we're frustrated. It calls us to engage even when we just want to have Thanksgiving dinner without any kind of hoopla, right? Because we know that those places are the places that our Unitarian Universalist faith and values tell us are most important to do this work. So why do we do it? Why do we call in? Why, as Unitarian Universalists, why do we do this together, right? We could show up at Showing Up for Justice and talk about racial justice, talk about social justice. We could show up at the ACLU and do work with the ACLU. We could show up at the NAACP and do that work. Why do we come and do it together as Unitarian Universalists? Why do we come here on Sunday? Why'd you all come here on Sunday? Why did some of you come yesterday? It's because our Unitarian Universalist, and in particular our Universalist heritage, says that we already have heaven on earth. It already exists. We have to make sure that people are able to access it, right? We already have enough resources here for everybody to be able to experience their needs met, their lives lived, and to be able to be loved. That's already here. So to me, what does that look like? What does that feel like? What does that taste like? It tastes like the cooking that I got from my grandmother. Flavorful, not spicy. Flavorful. It looks like brilliant colors, super saturated. That's how I feel at home. That's how I feel seen, right? It looks like music that has sung in Spanish and English, or as Lin-Manuel Miranda said in Hamblin, of Hamilton fame, calls it Espanglish, right? So you all can think about what that looks like to you, but you want to think about what it looks like to other people and then make that heaven on earth appear in as many places as you can, right? I'm a Unitarian Universalist because I believe it is a call to the holy or to community or the energy of the universe, however you design in your mind the divine. But it is a binding of us together in mutual liberation. The Unitarian part of our theology, people such as John Luther Adams, Five Smooth Stones, says that that fourth smooth stone, we deny the immaculate conception of virtue and affirm the necessity of social incarnation. What he's saying is we have to work for it, people, right? He's saying, like, the words that he used, the immaculate conception, he denies the immaculate conception of virtue. It is not enough. But really, if only it was that easy, right? If only it was that easy. I think my mic might be going up. Yeah, it's up. That's okay.
I'll be up here. There I am. So my kids, Andreas and Miguel, they're 17. They're going to be 18 next month. Oh, they tell me, Mama, your sermons, you know, I try not to ask for advice from them on the sermons, but everyone's it, right? They're like, you got to work in some pop culture references. You're going to lose the young people, really. I'm like, okay, what do you think I should work in? They said, The Simpsons. The Simpsons have something for any sermon that you could possibly give. They have a scenario. I'm like, really? They're like, yeah, trust us. I'm like, all right. So I usually talk to them about my sermons, and I say, okay, so what do you got for me on this? And they're like, oh, this clip. So for this sermon, they gave me this clip. Marge and Homer are in bed together, and it's right before the 2016 election, and Homer says, you know, I don't know who, you know, I'm going to vote for, and Marge says, I cannot be with somebody if they are going to vote for Trump. And Homer deadpans to the can, and that's how I became a Democrat. Right? Because their relationship allows them to have that conversation and allows them to know that calling in, that bottom line of virtue, of values, is something that is important enough to them to change. So you have relationships. You have spheres of influence that I will never have. You have places to go and places where you can go that I will never be able to go. You have people who will not hear my words because of the color of my skin, because of my sexuality, because of my gender. And it means we need you to take risk. We need you to be vulnerable in those places. We need you to have those conversations because you've been building those relationships. If I had told Homer that, he would have been like, I don't care. But Marge told him that, and he cared, right? And it allows you to tell each other the hard truths. A lot of you know the events in Charlottesville of 2017. The clergy that were on the front lines, of which I was honored to be there, because we had already formed relationships years in the past. It didn't just happen overnight. We had a level of trust in each other that allowed us to be able to be there. We had already had those crucial conversations. So a lot of you will ask, well, what can we do? How can we be in service to our faith in times like these? What does that look like? You're saying we need to have these conversations? Yes. And what else? Right? What else? So remember that kind of feeling that you had when you weren't sure if you were in the right place? You might get this with some of these suggestions. I'm going to own it. But just remember, it's all going to be okay. I switched over to English. It's all going to be all right. We need you, and we need everyone who isn't here to show up. We need you to show up to church. We need you to show up with guests. We need you to invite people to church and invite people to be here with you on this journey. We need UUs. We need Unitarian Universalists. This movement is going to be done as a faith movement, and we need UUs. We don't need more soccer players. We don't need more orchestra players. We don't need more swimmers. We don't need more chess champions. We don't need more book clubs. We don't need more wine tastings. We do need more Unitarian Universalist soccer players. We do need more Unitarian Universalist chess champions. We do need more Unitarian Universalist chefs. We do need more Unitarian Universalist swimmers. We need people to have Unitarian Universalism be part of their defining identity out in the world, not just here on Sunday. Because it is not a social club that we are here for, right? Our faith requires us to show up. It's about showing up out there. It's about showing up here so we can make a difference out there, right? That's why we're Unitarian Universalists. And so what does it look like to be doing that in relationship with people of color? It looks like recognizing how you are maintaining a culture of complicity and then changing that. It means making this church a priority in your life. Engaging with your families as a Unitarian Universalist every week. Maybe that's at dinner. Maybe it's at breakfast. Maybe it's over a meal. Maybe it's on a walk. Who knows? It means taking classes on white privilege and then acting on those classes, right? It means speaking up in public in places that I can't. And it looks like stepping back when people of color ask you to step back and let them lead, because we are experts in our own lived experience. And it means sometimes disappointing the soccer club and the book club because your priorities are getting to church. It means stewarding your church and the UUA with your time, treasure, and talent. It means calling religious professionals who are trained in anti-racism, anti-oppression, and multiculturalism, and then compensating them for it. It means paying Black and brown racial justice activist women for their work in liberation. It means realizing that the current political atmosphere has little to nothing to do with our national, with our mutual liberation. I know that that is hard to believe, especially with who we have in the office. But if it had to do with the office, we would have achieved mutual liberation when Barack Obama was elected, and we know that we do not have that. It is not specifically about who is in the White House. It is about the work that we do out in our community. It means having youth and young adults in positions of power to have their voices heard and exert influence. It means realizing that being just a good person isn't enough, and it is not going to get the job done. If that's all we needed, it would have happened ages ago, right? We have a lot of really good people. I get that. And it means showing up in ways that are hard and difficult and then doing it over and over again. It means knowing that you can set that down for a time, but you have to pick it back up. It means getting comfortable with being uncomfortable. Not guilt, not shame. That stops our work together. But getting into the work of serving our faith. Our sister in movement, Asada Shakur, has been exiled to Cuba since the 1970s. And she tells us this. She tells it to us as people of color, as women of color. And I share this with you as a gift of words because I believe that while she means it for black and brown women, I believe that it applies to all of us. It is our duty to fight for our freedom. It is our duty to win. We must love and support one another. We have nothing to lose but our chains. Todo va bien, mis amigos.